your summer for me to come and talk to you for an hour.
Yeah, let me know. I want to talk to you.
Oh, man.
I guess I'm going to meet you at that time as well.
Yes. Good evening, everyone. My name is Katty McEwen, and I represent House District 9, and I am proud to be the co-chair of our Joint Interim Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization. I'm delighted to be here at PCC tonight. I want to thank the college for hosting us. We've had a wonderful day. We had lunch with members of the Local Area Commission on Transportation. We spent the afternoon doing a windshield tour of some particular projects of interest up in the metro area. We touched on a number of projects. We visited the Abernathy Bridge. We visited the Sunrise Corridor project. We visited Powell Boulevard, and we had a discussion on bus rapid transit, things that you all are familiar with that live up here, but it was very enlightening for all of us to actually get to see them firsthand. And I want to thank ODOT staff for putting that together. Senator Beyer, thank you. Senator Beyer, our co-chair, is here today. Since we hail from different parts of the state, I thought it might be interesting to you to do some introductions this evening. I represent House District 9, which is a part of the state quite distant from here, from the city of Coos Bay to the northern edge of the city of Yahats, and almost into Eugene is my district. I have Coos Bay, Reedsport, Florence, Yahats, Mapleton. I have Scottsburg, Swiss Home, Deadwood, and a number of others, into Cheshire. So I have a very interesting part of the state that's quite different. We also have some guests that are with us tonight. We have our speaker, Representative Tina Kotek. We have Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer. And I believe Senator Dembro is also here. What I'd like to do is start with Senator Edwards and just a quick introduction about the district you represent and where you're from, sir.
Very quickly, my name is Chris Edwards. I'm state senator, and I represent Eugene, and happy to serve on this committee.
And I'm Rod Monroe, District 24. If you head about a half a mile east from here, you are in my district. I represent the Mid-Multnomah County area out to Gresham and also a big chunk of northern Clackamas County, and I have been in public office for 40 years.
I'm Senator Jackie Winters, and I represent District 10. That includes South Salem, West Salem, Monmouth, Independence, Almsville, and Turner, and I haven't been there quite as long as Senator Rod Monroe.
I'm Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16, Northwest Oregon, Tillamook, Clatsop, Columbia, Multnomah County, and the Working Waterfront, Western Washington County, and Bethany.
I'm Lee Beyer. I'm the senator representing District 6, which is Central, Lane, and Linn counties, and I'm the co-chair of the committee.
I'm Patrick, committee staff.
I'm State Representative Cliff Benz. I represent District 60, which is Burns, John Day, Baker City, Ontario, and Lakeview. Happy to be here.
My name is John Lively. I represent District 12, which is the city of Springfield.
Good evening. I'm Representative Greg Smith. I represent District 57, which is Milton Freewater, Hermiston, Morrow County, Gillam County, Sherman County, and the very best parts of Wasco County. I represent the Port of Umatilla, the Port of Morrow, Port of Arlington, Biggs Junction, and the Port of the Dalles. Thank you for having me here today.
My name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative from the Albany area.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Kenny Geyer. I'm here as a guest because I represent the district that you're sitting in. Welcome to House District 46.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Tina Kotek. I'm the Speaker of the Oregon House, and I represent House District 44, North and Northeast Portland, and I'm a guest tonight. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, everyone. I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Brennan just for a moment to give you the lay of the land tonight. We'll have invited testimony and then some public testimony, and he will tell you a little bit about how the lineup works.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have a list of 10 individuals who will be testifying as invited testimony. They'll be given about 5 minutes apiece. We're just going to start with the Region 1 Administrator and the Region 1 Chair of the Area Commission on Transportation, Then we'll have Bill White and Sandy McDonough speak about the cost of congestion study that was done a while back. That'll be followed by Mayor Hales and Councilor Carolyn Eccles from the City of Gresham, followed by Commissioner Paul Sovs from Clackamas County and Ian Cannon, who's the Transportation Director for Multnomah County. And then the last pair for invited testimony will be Shirley Craddock, Metro Councilor, and Neil McFarland, General Manager of TriMet. From there, we will move into taking names off the sign-up sheets. We are going to plan to give each person who's signed up.
I think we're going to have to cut it down to two.
A piece. Mm-hmm. That's to in order to accommodate the most number of people possible. So what we'll do is the chair will call up people in groups of two, and then she'll call up the two names that will be testifying after the group that's at the table, so we can kind of cue people up and take testimony until we run out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Brennan. So first on our docket tonight, we have Ryan Winsheimer from ODOT and Commissioner Roy Rogers. Commissioner Rogers, thank you for your hospitality today. We enjoyed having lunch with you and your local area commission on transportation, and I'll turn it over to you, gentlemen.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Ryan Winsheimer. I am the ODOT Region 1 manager for this section of the state, which covers Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington, and Hood River counties, and I really appreciated the opportunity to show you a bit about the Region 1 today and some of the issues that we're facing. Today, congestion on the Portland metro area roadways is getting substantially worse. We used to talk about it in terms of rush hour. Now we're talking about it in terms of how many hours a particular section of highway is congested. And for example, the Rose Quarter is now congested for 12 hours a day, and the George Abernathy Bridge is anticipated to be 17 hours a day of congestion by the year 2035. The Governor's Vision Panel put it this way: congestion in the Portland metro area is having a major impact on the economic vitality of all regions. It's not only a challenge creates for commuters and businesses in the metro area, it's also making it difficult for producers across the state to move their goods into and through Portland in a predictable and reliable and a timely fashion. It's true that volumes are growing faster in Oregon than in other places. In fact, Oregon's experiencing traffic growth at twice the national average, and there are a few key reasons why. First, more people are moving here. Last year, 85,000 people traded in their out-of-state driver's licenses for Oregon ones, and we expect our population to increase 25% by 2035. And the Portland metro area, we're averaging 111 people moving in every day. Second, an improving economy means more people are driving to and from jobs, and businesses are ordering more supplies and shipping goods to market. Trucks are responsible for hauling 74% of international trade goods into and out of Oregon, and we're anticipating a 60% increase in truck traffic by 2035. And third, of course, lower gas prices. Gas prices are 35% lower today than they were 10 years ago, and they're 18% lower than they were 1 year ago, making it more affordable for people to drive. ODOT has taken a number of steps to increase and optimize the efficiency of our existing system through the use of intelligent transportation systems like real-time, ramp meters, Traffic Management Operations Center, and our incident response vehicles. The real-time system on Highway 217 was installed in the summer of 2014 and provides congestion warnings, weather-related information, and other driver information to improve safety and allow drivers to make more efficient route choices. In just 1 year, we've seen a 21% reduction in crashes, and overall travel time reliability increased 10%. Improving safety helps relieve congestion. As you may note, 25% of all roadway congestion is caused by crashes. For every minute that a car is or a crash is blocking the roadway, it takes an additional 5 minutes for that crash to clear. In 2013, Region 1 completed a study that first identified key congestion points on major freeways in Region 1 and then brought in ODOT traffic experts and a consultant team to focus on developing low-cost solutions. The solutions identified most often was auxiliary lanes that connect one interchange to the next and provide more space for traffic to merge and exit, which smooths the flow of traffic and reduces the potential for crashes. In fact, we recently built two different auxiliary lanes, one I-5 northbound and one I-5 southbound between I-205 and Wilsonville. That particular area was actually two of the worst freight-related bottlenecks in the entire country, and with the addition of those auxiliary lanes, we're seeing traffic move much more smoothly. I understand we cannot build our way out of congestion by investing in highways for cars and trucks alone. Portland already has one of the highest percentages of people using transit, biking, and walking in the entire country. And continuing to expand safe, efficient travel options is critical to this, our success if we hope to adequately serve the region's growing travel demand into the future. You're going to get to hear more about our transit network and development of light rail corridors and bus rapid transit by Neil McFarlane a little bit later this evening. Back in 2009, the legislature passed the Jobs and Transportation Act, which provided funding for larger scale targeted improvements that are making a significant difference in communities today. Improvements to Troutdale, Brookwood, Oregon City, and Glencoe interchanges, new travel lanes on US 26 between 185th and Cornell, and the auxiliary lane I mentioned before are making conditions substantially better than they would be otherwise. It's anticipated that when the Sunrise Project opens on July 1st, it will reduce congestion in that corridor by 1 million hours of delay per year. Larger scale investments like these provide tangible businesses our public and businesses can experience. However, understanding that most of ODOT's funding today is dedicated to operating and maintaining the system we have in place, without additional funding being made available, larger projects like these are simply unaffordable. The federal government recently passed the FAST Act, which provided a modest amount of funding dedicated to freight corridors, some of which the Oregon Transportation Commission recently allocated to exploring development of large-scale solutions like widening the southern section of I-205, Rose Quarter, and Highway 217. In addition, the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation recently voted to dedicate some of their MPO funding to help develop these large-scale projects in hopes of potentially securing state or federal funding for constructing them at some point in the future. The federal government's new Fast Lane program for projects over $100 million represents an opportunity for addressing some of these project needs, but the program requires 40% match, so state and local governments need to participate at a significant funding level if we hope to compete for those funds. This last slide shows several examples of projects on the east side of our region that ODOT either recently completed or is in the process of developing to address congestion. It's not meant to be a comprehensive, complete list, but it is illustrative of the types of improvements under development by ODOT staff to provide some congestion relief. Most of these projects were funded through one-time sources like Jobs and Transportation Act, the recently passed FAST Act, Freight Formula Funds, and Tiger Grants, and other federal and state earmarks. Unfortunately, there is simply not enough funding available to complete the green projects on this map without additional resources. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this evening.
Thank you. And on deck, I would like to have just prepared to step up Mr. Wyatt and Ms. McDonough as soon as Mr. Rogers finishes. If we can make quick transitions, we'll be more efficient here.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you. And thank you all for coming, co-chairs and all members of the committee. We had a good opportunity to meet with one another all afternoon. And so I believe I know a few of you a little better. My name is Roy Rogers. I am the chairman of the ACT. I'm a Washington County Commissioner, and I'm supposed to tell you that I have served 32 years in that capacity, and then I served three terms as mayor of Tualatin before that. So I was elected when I was 10 years old, and that makes me about the right age, I believe. The ACT was formed in 2015. We have 31 members, quite a diverse group from Clackamas, Hood River, Multnomah, and Washington counties. I have enjoyed very much this group because they have a very broad perspective, and they understand that we're one state, one Oregon, and the sorts of facilities that we need have to be those that we all enjoy, and they have to have a nexus with this particular region. So I think that's important for you all to know, that we're not so myopic that we're just looking at this particular region and what it has to offer. Though, as Ryan pointed out, it's a very quick-growing area. In my own county, we're adding a small city every year of about 12, 13,000 people. The revolving door is there. We're having the same transportation issues. I very much appreciate you coming and listening to our particular needs and concerns. Whole issue I think that we have in Oregon is to determine what kind of a funding package that you all are going to allow us to do. That's an important step because we have to be very bold. We have to be, I think, very forward-thinking. for those of us who've been around for a while, I think, and some of you are that way, Rod and I, Senator Monroe, have known each other for a long time, and we get to work on projects and plan for things that we'll never see. And that's our legacy to those future generations. And I think that's what this panel is doing. And I hope that you take the actions of the vision panel very much to heart and take a look at the sorts of things that are needing to be done. One of the, and I won't take all of my time, but one of the things that you heard today, you saw a lot of East Multnomah County projects throughout the region here. We have projects, 217, 205, you saw that a bit. Rose Quarter in Portland is a major issue as well. But we are firmly entrenched in the belief that this is a multimodal system. And so those friends of ours from Hood River who are in this particular act, we understood clearly that they have airport concerns, they have port concerns, and we're very sympathetic to those multimodal issues. One of the challenges I think that you all face, and I'm going to go off script because I think it's important and I have a couple of minutes to do that, is that it's very difficult to define what your priorities are and what you have as a prioritization in the state system. I have been on JPAC for more years, I guess, than anybody, but I always used to quip that the project of regional significance is anything I can't pay for. And so that's not really what it ought to be. It ought to be those that we ought to take and find that are important. And they ought to have a nexus with the rest of Oregon. So to me, we need to look at the systemic issues of how we define what the prioritization of the state system is, and that's where you ought to look at putting your money. Our constituents, we are about, in this four-county region, about half of the state's population, and then we have some little tiny employers. In my neck of the woods, I just negotiated on behalf of the county a $100 billion deal with Intel last year, so that's not exactly a small investment. And so we have a lot of economic development occurring, but we believe that you shouldn't have to fix all of our problems, that we come, and I think as a group we do this, we come as partners. We're willing to do those municipal things that need to be done. I mean, there are things, there's sidewalks. I know in our county we're putting, in addition to the road improvements that we do and the normal kinds of bike and ped projects, we're putting another $2 million a year into sidewalk infill because we believe it's important. So I would hope as you look at a package that might fit in with the state needs that you come to us as your local partners and demand that we step up and be your partners, not in lip service but in reality, and that we're willing to take on these challenges. And with that in mind, our constituents will support additional taxes. They will. They have. In Washington County, we have a little thing called MISDIP. They've raised in the last, since about 85 when I got out there, we've had 750 million, 130 projects, and that's not including, that's a separate source. That's not our gas tax. That's not our systems development charges. So it can be done. If you tell people what you're going to deliver and how you're going to deliver it, I'm sure they'll come up with the dollars. But again, thank you all for coming here and spending a bit of the afternoon with all of us. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. All right, thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Wyatt and Ms. McDonough, please. Welcome to our panel. We appreciate you being here tonight.
You bet. Thank you very much. Bill Wyatt, Executive Director of the Port of Portland, was pleased to be with you on the bus tour this afternoon, where you got to personally engage in the region's congestion, although I might say, just as a personal consumer of I-205, it was a pretty good day. we weren't really stopped at any point along the way, so I guess that's the way it ordinarily would go when you're trying to demonstrate congestion. So we're here to talk a little bit about the cost of congestion study led by the PPA. We participated, ODOT, Metro, and a variety of other regional partners, and this is kind of the third iteration of that study, and it's there are a variety of data sources, and we can certainly make that available to the committee, and including personal interviews. So our consultants, and Sandy will describe this later, went out and talked to people throughout the state just to get a better feel for the cost of congestion, because it does have a cost, and that's part of why we chose to do this study. So I might make sure this works. There we go. You know, one big factor in congestion, it's a growing state, and the projection is that we're going to grow by 0.7% over the course of the next many years, probably as far as the eye can see. There are a variety of things driving that, but more people, more vehicles, no more infrastructure equals growing congestion. And I think you can see that it's particularly so here in the metropolitan area. Over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, the growth here has been considerable, and it jams up, you know, this key heart of the state's infrastructure. Travel growth. With population growth comes an increase in a variety of things, including expanding buyer and supplier markets, overnight deliveries. I mean, I think this is really a transformative time. Folks like Amazon and others are really dramatically increasing their presence in the marketplace, and it's going to put more vehicles on the road. Your constituents are voting for this transformation every day online when they shop using these services, but obviously it's placing a great deal of additional truck traffic on the road. It's increasing the number of really sophisticated distribution centers in our region and yours as well, if you're not from the metropolitan area. And those distribution centers are based on time. How far does it take, or how long does it take to get from the distribution center to the end point of delivery? And if it takes a long time, it means more distribution centers and more trucks and more distribution centers and more trucks. So it has a real spiraling effect on congestion. Obviously, the system performance overall degrades with this continuing pressure. And you can see in the Portland metropolitan area, 2010, 4.97% of the time the system is operating at capacity. And then you can see in 2040, that jumps up to a little over 14%, meaning really over capacity. The system is not functioning at all. And this, of course, assumes that we don't do anything about that. And I think this is a particularly interesting one to think about in 2040 without any kind of capacity improvements. The average household will spend 69 hours of congestion each year, and congestion here is defined as stopped in traffic, not moving slowly, but actually just stopped in traffic. Other MPOs around the state, that's about 18 hours on average, and that is, you know, time is money. So it does have obviously a very, very significant effect on productivity. We are a traded sector economy here, and becoming more so. That's particularly important because that traded sector gives businesses in our state and our community a larger market in which to sell, without which we would be basically taking in each other's laundry and selling to each other. So that traded sector is particularly important. Traded sector economies are even more dependent on transportation for economic purposes. Every indication that Oregon's role in the international economy is going to grow in absolute terms, but in relative terms as well. And we certainly are experiencing that ourselves. Here's a sampling, a little hard to see, I guess, of the major international trade industries, computer and electronics. And, you know, I think you can sort of, that kind of gets down to one company in particular and lots of others. Intel, 75% of what they manufacture out in Washington County is exported. It's exported by air. It's got to get from their production facilities in Hillsboro over to or around the airport. As I described to you earlier, Most of the freight forwarding activity occurs in or around the airport for a variety of reasons, whether it's flying in or out of PDX or not. Just a very challenging thing for them to figure out when to cut off their production, when to load their trucks, when to get to the airport based on being able to palletize it and move it either out of PDX or somewhere else up and down the West Coast. And the congestion just within the metropolitan area is a tremendous challenge for them, as it is for so many others. The Abernathy Bridge is a key choke point for that. And then finally, for mine, really it's a huge factor. This is a very big factor in business retention, expansion, and attraction. I can say the Port of Portland is the largest owner of industrial land in the state. Its business is very hot right now, but everybody that we're talking to, subject number one is, of course, the price of the land. A little bit of negotiation there, but subject number two is transportation. That's really all people want to talk to us. How do they get their workers there, and how do they get whatever it is they're producing or dealing in off the property? And that's sometimes a very challenging conversation to have. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Director Wyatt.
Welcome.
Thank you, committee members. I'm Sandra McDonough with the Portland Business Alliance, and I'm here today also representing the Oregon Business Plan. Are you going to drive for me, Bill?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you a perspective of what we heard from businesses as we did our cost of congestion studies. And we went out, we interviewed a number of businesses, and as you can see from the next slide, we talked to all different types of businesses to get a broad understanding of what the different issues were that businesses face because of congestion. The next one. And they're all over the state. So all of the businesses we talked to had operations not just in Portland or metropolitan areas, but virtually all over Oregon. And if you look at the next slide, the blue slides, blue lines show what Oregon's key freight corridors are. And then if you can see, it's a bit of a stretch, but the little bullseyes are where the bottlenecks are. And you can see that they're all along those freight corridors. So the bottlenecks that we're experiencing, not just in the Portland area, but all over the state, are in the key areas that businesses need to move their products on as they're trying to get their goods to the ports and to the markets and to their customers. And one thing we learned that I think was particularly important is that we heard from businesses all over Oregon, Southern Oregon, Eastern Oregon, the coast, that the congestion points in Portland impacted their movement of goods because so many of them have to move their goods through Portland to get to their markets. So as we went out and we interviewed all of these businesses, we learned a lot about how they're coping with congestion. And this was starting when we did our first study in 2005. We heard from many businesses that they were changing their operations and some of their freight movement to off-peak hours. And then by 2014, we heard that they were moving their operations to off-peak hours. And you can imagine what that means as we see trucks moving on I-5 in the middle of the night. These shifts have a lot of different implications that make it harder or more challenging for businesses. For example, when their customers are available to accept a delivery or the impacts on the driver time. And we're at a point where a lot of these businesses aren't seeing more options than what they can adjust to plan for congestion. And it has a real cost on the companies as they're moving goods. Fred Meyer, for example, told us that they have to build as much as 3 hours for buffer time into their delivery times to account for congestion. And you can imagine what that means in terms of the number of trucks they have to deploy. Genentech, if they miss a flight at PDX, that means that they actually have to take the product from the airport back to Hillsboro because this is very time-sensitive product and it has to be stored properly. So that's more long trips and expense. And Hampton Affiliates, which has 3 sawmills in Oregon and 45,000 truckloads every year, reports that their costs have gone up dramatically because of congestion and their need to limit driver time in those trucks. So next one, we're here, as we're moving forward in this last one, we have businesses that are continuing to look for ways to adapt, and all of the solutions, though, have real cost implications. One thing we heard is that a lot of companies, and particularly smaller companies,
are, well, all companies are adopting more complex logistic practices, and more of them, and smaller companies particularly, are shifting to third-party logistics companies. And because of the congestion impacts on delivery times, that drivers' hour limitations are as a growing issue, and we're seeing this impact a lot of companies. And we have an economic development program that is built on exports, and so the making it more difficult for the companies to get their products to markets or to the ports is really could impact our economic development strategy in the state. So the numbers are big, and the question is obviously, what can we do? And we probably can't stop congestion, but we can certainly slow down the growth. As Bill mentioned, our 2014 study projected that households in Portland region can expect to spend another 69 hours a year stuck in traffic by 2040 if no additional investments are made. And I want to point out that that was up from 50 hours in our 2010 study. With the investments called for in our regional transportation plans, we think that that amount can be reduced from 69 hours to 37 hours, which is a significant improvement. And for the other metro areas in the state, we're talking about seeing congestion from reduced from 18 hours by 2040 to 6 hours if regional transportation plans are adopted. And then lastly, the dollar value is significant. For the state as a whole, we believe that making these investments to reduce congestion would yield about $1 billion in benefit by the end of by 2040, and more than 8,000 jobs. And we also want to point out that the studies found that transportation investments have a return of $2.40 for every dollar invested, which is pretty darn good. So these investments have a huge impact on Oregon and our effort to grow our economy. And we are here, I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Business Plan to tell you that we want to work with you to find a transportation package that we can gain wide support for in our state.
Thank you, Ms. McKenna. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Mayor Hales and Councillor Eccles, please. And while they're approaching the dais, or the panel, I'd like to just take a moment to introduce a couple of other people in the audience. I know Carmen Four is here, representing the governor's office as the transportation advisor. And I'd like for anyone who sat on the governor's vision panel, which was a very lengthy, in-depth piece of work that culminated recently and is the foundation for the work that we are beginning to do across the state. If you were part of the vision panel, please let us identify you. I know Ms. Pape is here. Is there anyone else who participated in the governor's vision panel? A number up here. I did as well.
John Mollis.
Thank you all for the hours and hours and hours that you put into that process, too. Oh, and the vision panel is available online at visionpanel.wordpress.com. Also, all of the information that you're seeing here, we're not in the mothership today, so it's not going to be online immediately. But once Patrick gets back to Salem, all the materials that you're seeing tonight will be available on the Oregon Legislative Information System. So you'll be able to go in and see all of these documents in a day or so, I'm guessing, tomorrow. Welcome, Mayor. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Byer and McEwen, and members of the Joint Committee. I'm so glad you're having your hearing here in the Rose City. I'm Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland. Also glad that you're having this meeting here in what is exactly at the geographic center of the city of Portland. A little counterintuitive, but you are at just about the geographic middle of our city in both cardinal directions. And that's a good place to be, and we appreciate Portland Community College's investment in this corner of our city. But if you go east of here, as you did today on Powell Boulevard, you'll see a part of our city where it is among the most dangerous places to travel in our community. If you live in East Portland, you are twice as likely to die from traffic violence as you are in other neighborhoods of the city. Let me let that sink in for a second. You are two times more likely to die walking to work or to school in your neighborhood, in the neighborhoods east of here, than in the rest of the city. That's because those streets are not yet fully improved in the way that they should be as urban streets. So I hope you keep those statistics in mind as you develop legislation. Congestion is certainly a problem, and we all want to ease congestion. But a funding bill cannot be built exclusively around moving goods to and through Portland without accounting for the people who live here and who are at risk from that traffic violence. So whatever plan you put together for our state needs to prioritize the safety of the system, because that's fundamental. We should be building a system that works for all mode choices and abilities, and here's why. Only 28% of new Portland commuters since 2000, the last 16 years, drove to work. 28% drove to work. The rest bicycled, worked at home, took transit, or walked. Wednesday of this week, our city council will adopt our comprehensive plan for the next 20 years, which it plans on another 250,000 Portlanders. That's not an abstract planning projection. Portland grew by 1,000 people a month over the course of the last year. That is the pace that we will maintain going forward, absent some big economic reversal. There is not enough roadway capacity for those people to drive, period. It is not physically possible. Therefore, we have to make those other modes work better. So how do we, as state and local leaders, work together to meet those pretty daunting challenges and address those numbers? Four things. One, build multimodal streets. Two, invest in transit. Three, align roadway ownership with function. And four, leverage partnerships. First, building infrastructure that supports all modes. In North Portland, we made improvements to Cully Boulevard that turned what was a country road in the past into now a city street with sidewalks, protected bike lanes, and on-street parking. We saw a 70% increase in biking over the course of 3 years. Sandy Boulevard, a roadway that was transferred in ownership from the state to the city, saw some streetscape improvements that resulted in a 40% crash reduction since 2007. So we can do this. We can make these urban roadways safer by building multimodal streets. Second, invest in transit. The more people get out of their cars and use those other modes, the better chance we have to make this place work with 250,000 more people. And state transit investments are going to be critical because, frankly, the city of Portland's ability to write big checks out of urban renewal funds is going away as those urban renewal districts expire. So our ability to come up with the money to pay for the local match will increasingly rely on state funding. Third, aligning roadway ownership with function. You've seen it. You were on Powell today, and 82nd is right outside our windows. It makes no sense for these urban arterials to continue to be state highways. We need to work together on jurisdictional transfer of these roadways, put them in proper condition, and give us the deed, and we'll maintain them going into the future. Fourth, we need to leverage partnerships, and Roy Rogers mentioned one of them. Let's work together to fix the bottleneck at the Rose Quarter. That's a great design, brought together in a great partnership, a lot of great community involvement. Region 1 did a super job developing that project, just like they did in developing the plans for Outer Powell, an excellent job of working with the community in partnership. Let's leverage those partnerships, fix some of those problems, and show people that we can make progress. Likewise, ODOT is really working in partnership with us on the disposition of some surplus property in ways that will support community plans and goals in our city, and I want to commend and appreciate the good work that they're doing there. You know, the need to invest is acute. The citizens here have demonstrated in just the last month that they will support transportation investments. So I hope that's encouraging to your work. I also want to mention another point. I worked for 10 years in the transportation industry prior to running for mayor. I spend a lot of time with my fellow mayors around the country. I'll be at the U.S. Conference of Mayors in Indianapolis in a couple of weeks, and I've just come back from making a presentation to the Secretary of Transportation while we compete against 7 other cities for a Smart Cities Transportation Grant. I get a good sense of what other cities are doing, and frankly, while we ponder, other states and city-states are making major investments. Los Angeles, we love to laugh at Los Angeles. Their 3010 plan is investing $40 billion in transit. Our light rail system has cost $4 billion so far. Phoenix, another city that we urban Portlanders love to laugh at, is investing $31 billion in roadway and transit infrastructure in their metropolitan area. We as a state and as a region are in great danger of being left behind. But I do believe that with those kinds of investments in multimodal streets, in transit, in partnerships, we can work together to make this a more livable and more prosperous state and give people the way to safely get around their community and around our state. Again, I want to thank you for holding this hearing here. Our citizens really appreciate it when you do this, and I do too. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, and the best of luck on your grant application. We'll be thinking good thoughts.
Good evening, Co-Chairs Byron McEwen and the members of the Joint Interim Committee on Transportation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this evening on behalf of the City of Gresham, Oregon's fourth largest city and home to 107,000 residents. My name is Carolyn Eccles, and I serve on the Gresham City Council. Our mayor, Shane Bemis, planned to be here this evening to testify, but tonight is also his son's eighth grade graduation.
My goodness.
So I have been extended the opportunity to testify in his place. Your visit, as many have said, is timely and greatly appreciated. In the past 2 months, our city council has discussed transportation issues at three separate city council meetings. This is a very high priority in our community, and the committee's interest in working together to find solutions is timely, urgent, and critical. When it comes to the conditions of our streets, Gresham has reached a crisis point. In total, Gresham has 900 lane miles of roadway. To offer some context around this public asset, the estimated replacement cost would be $1.2 billion if we were building the system from scratch today. As you can see on the map attached to my testimony, around 37% of that system has a current maintenance designation of poor or failed condition. The replacement cost of just the streets designated as poor or fair would be around $110 million. Gresham receives less than $10 million annually in gas tax and vehicle registration fee revenue, with much of that going to try to prevent the rest of our streets from degrading into poor condition. So the magnitude and severity of this gap is very pronounced. While our council has asked staff to research and explore potential local solutions to help alleviate this issue, it is clear from the size of the gap that we absolutely cannot get there on our own, and we desperately need help from the state of Oregon. While I speak more in a moment about Gresham's project needs, I want to implore the committee to focus on the simple first, boring but critical street maintenance. This is a prudent investment given that every dollar spent on preservation can eliminate or delay $6 to $14 in rehabilitation or reconstruction costs down the road. That is a tremendous investment. While maintenance dollars are a critical priority for most, if not all, cities in Oregon, I also want to take a moment to speak about the need for future project investment as well. I know that the committee is in the process of exploring the general framework for potential transportation package for the 2017 legislature, and that now is not the appropriate time to reference specific projects. While I refrain from doing so, I do want to mention one local example to highlight the need for major transportation investment in Oregon. Gresham is home to the Springwater Urban Growth Expansion Area. This area is largely zoned for critical industrial investment and jobs and was brought into the urban growth boundary by the region in 2002. Unfortunately, with a few minor exceptions, Springwater has sat fallow for over a decade since the planning work was conducted because our state and region lack the investment tools to serve the area with infrastructure, and the huge costs would be impossible for Gresham ratepayers to bear alone. One of these fundamental infrastructure hurdles is the need for an interchange, as well as arterial and collector improvements in the area, estimated to cost in the neighborhood of $50 million. While that sounds like a large figure on scale, it could be the key to opening up Oregon to thousands of new traded sector jobs, highway jobs, and additional income taxes for the state of Oregon. The demand for industrial land is significant in this economy, and we are on pace to run out of shovel-ready industrial lands in Gresham in the very near future. After that, we will be at the mercy of identifying an infrastructure investment solution before we can continue to grow our jobs base. These are investment needs and examples like this across Oregon, and we want the committee to think big as it designs an approach to the 2017 legislature. While incremental investment and small increases are easier to make over time, that will not address the staggering needs we have for both maintenance and project-specific investments. Restoring Oregon's roadways and building for the future requires a bold and urgent push. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here this evening and to share Gresham's perspective. The state of Oregon is a critical partner for our transportation assets and services, and we value your interest in this topic and the work that you are doing in advance of the upcoming session. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Eccles. And for anyone who has written testimony that you would like to submit, we have staff right behind the camera over here. If you hand it to them, they will put it up on OLIS tomorrow. Also, on the agenda that you have, there is an email address. If you have an electronic form, you can email into the staff, and they will put the testimony up on OLIS. Thank you. Next up, we have Commissioner Savas and Transportation Director Cannon, please. Welcome to our committee, sir.
Thank you. It was great to talk with some of you today at lunch. Co-Chair McKeown and Co-Chair Beyer and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Savas, Clackamas County Commissioner, and thank you for the opportunity to be able to appear before you today. At the outset, let me express my great appreciation for your work on this topic. One of the greatest challenges facing the state of Oregon is our transportation system. As the Vice Chair of the Region 1 Area Commission on Transportation, I am committed to working with you and other leaders around the state to find solutions that will improve the daily lives of our residents, our employers, and our visitors. More than ever before, we are seeing unprecedented levels of congestion on our roadways in Clackamas County. We are doing the best we can with our limited resources to address the wear and tear on our roads, and the current funding models simply to maintain these roads are falling short of the need. Currently, Clackamas County manages 1,400 miles of roads and experiences an annual $17 million funding shortfall to maintain current service levels to cover the cost of paving and preservation projects. We're doing our best. In May, just a few weeks ago, we passed an advisory vote to seek funding on the November ballot for our road maintenance, even though we'll only cover a fraction, a very small fraction of that $17 million deficit. We met with our cities last Thursday evening, and we all got consensus on moving forward to do that in partnership and seeking a gas tax increase. We just can't wait any longer, and fortunately, Portland was successful. And that offers a little bit of a ray of light, as expressed earlier in some earlier testimony. But even if our effort is not successful, we're counting on the legislature. We're counting on you to help with those needs. I can't say in the last 6 years more, I can't say it any more strongly how important it is in Clackamas County to retain the employers we have in the state of Oregon and bring in new. We are growing our population faster than we're growing jobs, and that just a greater need for social services. And frankly, I think if we actually think about the right sizing of our transportation system to our population or our job potential, that's more revenue for the state and obviously for local jurisdictions. The investment in both project readiness that was just approved for the Rose Corridor, Highway 217 and 205, was, I think, a great accomplishment. The investment in the 205 Abernathy Bridge will also provide some, in case of an emergency or the big earthquake, it could be a major pathway in event of a major disaster over the Willamette River. But this is only one of the large projects in the region that require significant investment. Our economic engine in Clackamas County is the Sunrise Corridor, and I guess you toured part of that today. Just probably a couple miles east of where you looked at, it goes from 6 lanes to 2 lanes. So as you approach the edge of Happy Valley, which is our fastest growing city in Clackamas County, we have so much potential out there. And that really is, I think, with all the land shortage we have in the region, it's so important that we actually look at opportunities to have that fallow land accessible, and transportation is the key issue why businesses can't use that land. As you saw today, phase one of the Sunrise Project is complete. Thank you. Thanks to the legislature for the JTA Act. That was huge. We This project will substantially ease congestion along the corridor and promote job growth and retention in the industrial area. We are now beginning to turn our attention to phase two, and that's the next area. It's about 2.5 miles to the east, and that's, again, critical for Happy Valley and our growing area. I do want to say that the perspective, if you heard some of the speakers today, we heard the city's perspective, and that's, you know, that's internal in the cities within those boundaries, and at the county level, which I serve, we have a greater perspective of the system, the transportation system for all the cities, and a lot of the cities in Clackamas County are not contiguous, so there's a lot of travel time, and our population is really spread out. We are an urban, rural type county, and we really use our roads, and they show it. They show the wear and tear. But also, my role at the AOC and going a number of parts around the state and talking to other state county commissioners and state legislators, it is clear that our system in this region is really part of our, on one hand, it's our future, but transportation is important and the perspectives are different. And I think getting freight to and from this region to the ports is incredibly important. To wrap this up, I want to thank you again for your dedication, your persistence, and your courage in working on this issue. I look forward to working with you in the months ahead, and I would be happy to answer any questions sometime in the future.
Thank you, Commissioner. Welcome, Mr. Cannon.
Hi, I'm Ian Cannon, and I'm the Director of Transportation for Multnomah County. Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee, for this opportunity to talk about the challenge that face our county's transportation system. Between our Willamette River bridges in the heart of Portland and our rural and urban roads, Multnomah County stewards multi-billions of dollars of transportation assets. We're woefully short of the resources we need to preserve our current system, respond to the growth in our region, support the local and regional economies, and adapt to changing needs. Multnomah County is looking to the legislature for a bold transportation package so that we can do better than just slow the rate of deterioration. We'd like to improve the infrastructure that supports our safety, economic vitality, and the future quality of life. Some of the key findings from the One Oregon report that particularly apply to Multnomah County's assets are transportation maintenance, bicycle and pedestrian investments, including safe routes to school, and seismic resiliency. With regard to transportation maintenance, we've recently completed a study of the needs of all the Willamette River bridges for the next 20 years. We identified $650 million for maintenance in the next 20 years to preserve these assets. If nothing changes, our expected funding is less than one-fifth of that amount. On our roads, we use a GIS-based system to help us track and plan our pavement maintenance. We're currently able to spend less than half of what we need to maintain our pavement condition index. This excludes what we should be spending to maintain our rural bridges, culverts, and drainage system. Basic maintenance is not the work that provides photo opportunities or stimulates the imaginations of planners and engineers, but it's the work that keeps our roads and bridges from crumbling underneath us. With the resources currently available, we prioritize spending to slow the rate of deterioration of our system and address emergency needs. We do not have the resources to maintain our system. Our urban roads and bridges are part of a mature system. We don't anticipate massive construction of new infrastructure. We do anticipate improvements to the system to decrease congestion and to respond to development. Many of our projects look to provide improved bicycle and pedestrian connections, filling in the many missing links in those systems so that people have safe alternatives to the single occupancy automobile. A number of our projects look to provide children with safe routes to school. A child shouldn't have to put their safety at risk to get to class. Providing people with transportation alternatives improves safety and health and decreases the growth in automobile congestion. With the help of the legislature and in partnership with ODOT, we're making progress towards safety improvements on Cornelius Pass Road. We anticipate that this project will go to bid in the fall of 2017. However, the funding that was provided was only a down payment on the needs of this route. The safety study that was performed identified significant additional needs for this corridor, as well as the need for additional investigation. We look forward to getting started on construction of the shorter-term improvements and to working with the legislature and ODOT to continue to improve the corridor while respecting the local residents, the character, and the land usage of the area. Seismic resiliency is a major focus for our transportation division, particularly as it relates to our Willamette River bridges. Of our six major crossings, only the Sauvy Island Bridge and the soon-to-be-complete Selwood Bridge are built to modern seismic standards. Our four downtown Portland movable bridges, the Hawthorne, Burnside, Morrison, and Broadway, were all constructed prior to seismic design, and each has significant seismic vulnerabilities. Our recently completed Willamette River Bridge study identifies $650 million in seismic retrofit needs over the next 20 years for these four structures, in addition to the $650 million for maintenance. Our main focus for seismic resiliency is the Burnside Bridge, which has been identified as a regional lifeline route due to its central location in the local street grid and connectivity to many key destinations, such as hospitals. We're embarking on a seismic feasibility study to determine the solution that best meets the community's needs. Making this lifeline route resilient is critical not only to our community's ability to respond to the immediate emergency caused by the Cascadia earthquake, but also to start the rebuilding of the community and economy thereafter. Whether the feasibility study points toward a major comprehensive retrofit or toward replacement, the price tag for a seismically resilient Burnside Bridge will be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. I'd like to touch for just a moment on our Selwood Bridge replacement project because I think it demonstrates a number of ideas that we need to embrace for future success. Multnomah County is the lead agency for this project, but it's a multi-jurisdictional project. Collaboration between Multnomah County, the Oregon Department of Transportation, the City of Portland, and the Federal Highway Administration has been critical to success. Big picture thinking has been essential. The leaders of the respective organizations recognized that this was an opportunity to address multiple needs with one project, so it doesn't just fix a bridge. It provides safe, multimodal connectivity, seismic resiliency, improved traffic flow, enhanced habitat, and improved recreational opportunities. The project has also provided hundreds of jobs, over 100,000 hours of apprentice training, and over $40 million of disadvantaged minority, women-owned, and emerging small business contracting. One component that has been crucial to the Selwood Bridge replacement is that the legislature provided Multnomah County the avenue to use the vehicle registration fee to help fund the project. The VRF has enabled the county to fund approximately half of this major project. It's a funding mechanism we'll need to explore as we look toward future major projects like the Burnside Bridge. In closing, we look forward to continued collaborative relationships with the legislature, ODOT, and our many regional partners. We recognize that big picture thinking and a multi-jurisdictional approach is required to solve problems. We cannot adequately address the challenges we face around basic maintenance, connectivity, safety, and seismic resiliency with the resources currently available. We encourage the legislature to be bold as they develop a transportation package.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here this evening. And I would like to call up our final panel, Councillor Craddock. Mr. McFarland, please. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you so much. My name is Shirley Craddock, Metro Councillor. I represent the east part of the metro region. My district begins at 122nd, includes East Portland, Gresham, Fairview Wood Village, Troutdale, Damascus, and the Boring Area. Really, thank you so much for this opportunity tonight to meet with you and pass on a few words as a Metro Councillor. I also serve as the Vice Chair of the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation, or JPAC, a body of elected and appointed officials which collaborate with Metro Council on transportation funding and policy. I'd like to talk with you about three things. First, some of the key problems we face as a region. Second, what are we doing about them? And third, how we can use your help. But first of all, let me bring to your attention what an appropriate location to have this testimony tonight is on this Portland Community College campus. As Mayor Hales mentioned, you are in the center of the city of Portland. But this is also the crossroads of a city street and a state highway that is a candidate for jurisdictional transfer. You are at the intersection of the two of the most busiest transit lines in the city of Portland, where enough people get on the bus each week to fill the Timber Soccer Stadium each week, 18,000 people. Often buses pass people sitting on the street waiting for a bus because they're full. 10 blocks from here is a light rail station on the Max Green Line and the Interstate 205. And then you're in the heart of a vibrant, very diverse, and growing J District. This area illustrates many of the challenges and opportunities our region faces. It also illustrates how Metro is working with the numerous partners on transportation and community development. For example, we led the adoption of the East Metro Connection Plan, which has helped identify a set of priority projects, activity, and congestion issues that help affect the people who live, work, and play on the east side of the region. One key project that came out of the East Metro Connection Plan is the Powell Division and Transit Development Project, to be with the first bus rapid transit that will be available to transit riders in Portland and the metro region. This line is going to connect Mount Hood Community College with Portland Community College, multiple high schools and other educational facilities along the route with Portland State University. Right across the street, right behind you, Metro has bought a shuttered furniture store. If you turn around, you can see it. We're partnering with the Community Development Corporation to build 48 units of affordable housing that will offer the residents there an excellent transit service. We've also provided a grant to help Portland Community College enable students to get this crowded campus without driving alone. So back to my three points. We have challenges we need to address through investments in the regional transportation system. The first one is, first, our growth in congestion. As you've already been hearing from multiple other testifiers, as you know, Oregon leads the nation in in-migration, and our region is attracting large numbers of new residents. This growth puts a significant burden on both our roads and our ability to provide high-quality transit throughout the region. Second, we are committed to leadership on addressing climate change. At your direction, we recently adopted a broad multimodal climate smart strategy to reduce carbon emissions from transportation in ways that meet state targets while providing many other co-benefits for mobility, health, and cost savings. But we'll need your help to make the investments in both roads and transit necessary to reap these benefits. Third, one out of every six households, one out of six in our region, are renters who spend over 45% of their income on housing plus transportation. Along with the work we are doing to address the current affordable housing crisis, we need to make transportation investments that help to address this broader problem of affordable living. Affordable living includes both housing and transportation. To address these and other challenges, our region has developed a shared vision and is putting real money on the table to back it up. Because of our integrated approach to land use and transportation planning and multimodal investment strategy for addressing our transportation needs, residents of our region have more options and shorter commutes than residents of other comparable urban regions in the United States, which saves them over $2 billion every year. While we have congestion, it's still less congestion than other parts of the region. Our commutes are shorter. As part of this approach, JPAC just approved a three-year investment program of $130 million in flexible regional funds to support development of the region's two high-capacity transit projects. Well, you probably have heard of them. Southwest Corridor. It's going to connect the city of Portland with Tualatin through Tigard. And then the second one is the Powell Division Transit and Development Project that's connecting Gresham with downtown Portland. But we're also addressing three major bottlenecks that you've also heard testimony tonight. We've also are contributing to early investments in the I-205 at the Abernathy Bridge, Highway 217, and I-5 at the Rose Quarter. So the region is putting money where we need to in both transit and these major bottlenecks. Finally, like other successful urban areas around the country, we're preparing for a conversation with our region's voters about how to raise revenues for investments in both roads and transit. But no matter how successful we are at the regional level, as the other people have also testified, we still need your help. First, as you know, the Governor's Transportation Vision Panel has highlighted how congestion in the Portland region affects the entire state. a 2017 transportation package should provide significant new funding for both roads and transit. This will help repair and improve freeway bottlenecks and key arterials, provide mobility to people of all ages and incomes, and take pressure off the road system to provide additional capacity for freight movement. Second, we are exploring whether to ask the state to impose an additional increment of gas tax or other user fee on the Portland region to be programmed by our region specifically to address congestion to our region. And most importantly, we need you to be bold. You will hear from people to limit your ambitions, but we urge you to think big. The governor's panel has shown us the magnitude of the need of investment. Other states are moving ahead with very large funding packages and innovative new ideas, and we encourage you to be bold in your thinking. And as already testimony has mentioned, Denver, Los Angeles, Phoenix and Seattle are already putting effort into transportation funding. And finally, in closing, the Metro Council stands ready to work with you to support a robust revenue package and to also help flesh out innovative new approaches to both funding and policy. We thank you so much for this opportunity to testify, for your interest in this, and for your commitment to the Oregon transportation system. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to be in our region. We're very honored to have you here. I also wanted to leave you with three particular thoughts about transportation investment. First of all, the value of our state partnership in transportation.
Excuse me, Mr. McFarland. Yes. We'll need your name for the record.
Oh, please. I'm sorry. Neil McFarland, TriMet General
Thank
Manager.
Thank you so much. So,
second is the multi-jurisdictional approach that we take to transportation investment in this region. And finally, how important it is for us to continue to make investments in the transportation system if we want a strong economy, livable communities, income equity, and environmental progress. So first, elaboration on the state partnership. When there aren't enough funds available to maintain roads or fix congestion bottlenecks, it creates a problem for buses as well as cars. We have to pay our drivers to sit in traffic, which is incredibly inefficient, both for the people who are on the bus and the system itself. So while road funds aren't directly used on public transportation, it's critical to our work that the road system be funded at a level that allows cities, counties, and our partners at ODOT to maintain the existing system and make improvements to address congestion. We can't achieve our regional goals or support achieving the state's goals without a strong partnership with the state and with the legislature. Now, turning to the second point, which is our multimodal, multi-jurisdictional approach here in this region. In addition to the partnership with the state, this region has been very successful at leveraging federal discretionary dollars. The state, through lottery-backed bonds, has played a significant role in this, and we thank the legislature for your past help in that. The collaborative approach we've taken has allowed us to leverage billions of dollars, literally, of federal investment into the region. Today, we have a light rail system, which five lines, 145 vehicles, 97 stations, and 60 miles of right-of-way. Light rail right now will carry 1 in 3 evening rush hour commuters in the Banfield and the Sunset corridors. Our newest light rail project, which we opened last September, the Orange Line, incorporated new thinking about demonstrated multimodal investment in facilities. It provided $40 million in road improvements, including a dedicated access point for the Brooklyn Yards rail yard, $60 million in bike and ped facilities, in addition to the Telecom Crossing, one of our few seismically resilient crossings across the Willamette River. Our strategy overall is working. Today, 45% of rush hour commuters going to downtown Portland are on transit. We provide over 320,000 trips a day. That equates to 100 million times a year somebody steps on one of our vehicles. We're the 24th largest metropolitan area, but 9th in per capita ridership. Some would say we actually outbox our weight class. But none of that would have happened without collaboration between jurisdictions and between modal interest, and we're continuing in that tradition. As Councillor Craddock noted, recently JPAC voted to allocate money for the development of these key transit and transportation projects that she listed. So finally, I want to just look to the future a bit. And we face in this region a whole new layer of challenges, all of which will demand a much higher level of investment and creativity on all our parts. First of all, related to growth, 400,000 new residents in this region by 2035, 260,000 jobs in this, new jobs in this region by 2035. And some would consider that not as optimistic as projections might lead. That's the same as adding four new cities of Hillsborough, all primarily within the same land area. So there's no question when you put those numbers together that we're going to need to maintain strong neighborhoods, to keep the economy strong, mitigate congestion and protect the environment, and provide equitable access to employment centers for all our citizens. We will need to invest in all of our transportation modes. TriMet spent the last 2 years meeting with communities around the region developing what we call service enhancement plans. These have been roadmaps, essentially, for where communities and business interests and chambers want the transit system to grow and develop. And the desire for more transit service was overwhelming at each and every meeting. So with the funding we have, we can achieve about a third of the plan that is actually on the table. And part of that demand is the huge demographic shift in the region in the last 15 years. Working class families have moved to areas with affordable housing, like East Portland, where we are right now. And in those areas, we need to add new transit lines to serve key employment areas like the Columbia Corridor and the Troutdale Industrial Area. As Councilor Craddock noted, Portland area also added a climate smart or developed a climate smart strategy that relies very heavily on transit investment to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So I also wanted to emphasize the need to invest in basic infrastructure such as sidewalks and safe crossings in communities where they simply don't exist today. Those of you who were on the tour with us this afternoon saw that along Powell Boulevard and other areas. And so we know locally, as well as hopefully at the state, there will be a need to step up to meet these challenges. And again, we are already doing that in many parts of the Portland area with local resources coming to the table. But at the end of the day, we need the state to continue to be a significant player in this effort. So we stand ready to work with you to help build the consensus needed to achieve the level of investment needed to meet these important needs. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. McFarland, and thank you both for your service and for your words. As we transition into the second half of our hearing, the community-based portion of our hearing, it seems appropriate to me that we take a moment and reach out to a community that is 3,000 miles away from here but that has been devastated. And with all due respect, friends and colleagues, I hope that you will join me in taking just a moment to acknowledge that a community has been assaulted, families have been devastated, public safety workers have done a tremendous job responding to an event that is just unfathomable. Medical personnel have been doing heroic jobs in dealing with an event that is just very, very difficult to even imagine. On that note, I would like to invite you all to join me in a moment of silence in remembering the community of Orlando. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Now, we have 36 people who have signed up. We have an hour scheduled for testimony, so we're going to do this in rapid-fire time. What I'd like to do is bring up our first two presenters, Terry Parker and Marshall Koba. On deck, we will have Carrie Waters and Elaine Friesen-Strong. And third panel will be Chris Rawl and Aaron Brown. So please, in any order that you choose, Patrick has a timer. We're going to stick to this as closely as we possibly can so we can give everybody an opportunity to testify. Gentlemen.
My name's...
Two. Do you have it on three or two?
On.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it on? My name's Terry Parker. Hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent in Portland and throughout Oregon to accommodate bicycling. Portland's 20-year transportation system plan includes over $800 million, part of which is for redesigning intersections and crafting road diets that will allow bike lanes to take over more space on city streets. Over the next 20 years, car trips in the Portland metro area are expected to increase by 49%, regardless of how much mass transit service is added. Road diets that reduce motor vehicle capacity and curb extensions that require buses to stop in for passengers in travel lanes are already creating excessively more congestion. PBOT is being held hostage by the bicycle library lobby. Moreover, as primary financial stakeholders that pay for TSP projects, motorists are overwhelmingly underrepresented on PBOT advisory committees. Hundreds of millions of dollars are also being spent on transit, even though public transit on average uses more energy per passenger mile as measured in BTUs and creates more emissions per passenger mile as measured in CO2 than driving a modern fuel-efficient car. While transit fares on average cover only 25% of the operating cost, just one two-axle bus does as much damage to the roads as 1,200 cars. To establish equity and financial justice, motorists must no longer be viewed as the cash cow ATMs. Any transportation funding package presented to the legislature must be balanced with an equal distribution of privileges and burdens, whereby the alternative modes become more financially self-sustainable. This reestablished equity must include a surcharge on transit fares to help pay for the damage buses do to the streets and roads, and license registrations and or user fees assessed on adult bicyclists that will pay for bicycle infrastructure. My full testimony, including where I found the facts and what a bicycle fee could look like, will be on your system tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Koba.
Good evening, members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, representing the American Council of Engineering Companies and our 115 member firms and 3,500 employees in the state of Oregon. We are here in strong support, major support, of a major game-changing transportation investment package being developed and passed for the 2017 legislative session. ACEC Oregon has always advocated for innovative and significant investment in Oregon's infrastructure. Our members are intimately knowledgeable about the failing state of Oregon and America's system, as well as the urban congestion. We understand and appreciate the need for a consistent and continual robust funding stream to maintain this infrastructure. This is our priority legislation for 2017, and we pledge our full support in assisting to assist in passing a major game-changing funding package. This package will ensure state and local governments, with our assistance, design and construct some of the most significant projects in the urban areas of the state. We also acknowledge the importance and necessity for multimodal solutions where appropriate. Our engineers work under a code of conduct that first and foremost protects the public health, safety, and welfare. If this joint committee was our client, it would be our duty to passionately advocate our professional belief that this game-changing package is needed for our structural needs, our seismic needs, our congestion needs, and our societal needs, as well as our economic needs. This package will also add assurances that the major investments we now enjoy will not decay into a state of disrepair that will be much more expensive to repair and to further delay the many benefits of doing those key projects as soon as possible. We've seen other states make significant investments. Oregon should follow those states. But as in the Oregon way, we should be bold pioneers where necessary and when it is in our best interest. Roads and bridges know no political boundaries, and it's investing in modern infrastructure is not partisan. It is the right thing to do. ACEC Oregon thanks Governor Brown, legislative leadership on this committee, for your political courage to take the lead on this issue, and we ask you to use this as a resource moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Carrie Waters, Elaine Friesen, is it Strang or Strong?
Strang.
Strang, thank you. And on deck we have Aaron Brown and Tom, it looks like Sinsel.
Sinsel.
Thank you.
All right. Good evening. My name is Carrie Waters, and I come before you as a lifelong member of the Portland Urban Indian Community, a member of the Tlingit Tribe, as well as community engagement manager to the Native American Youth and Family Center and as co-chair of the Transportation Justice Alliance. TJA builds power in low-income communities and people of the global majority to ensure an affordable, equitable, and environmentally sustainable transportation system. Our alliance believes that transportation is a human right and that a just transportation system is essential to regional prosperity. We urge you to prioritize our values of affordability, accessibility, safety, healthy communities, healthy environment, meaningful participation, economic justice, and accountability. We see great opportunity in the 2017 transportation package, and we urge you to challenge assumptions made about the topic of the hour, congestion. There is conflicting data related to the cost of congestion. For example, Metro's safety report indicates that collisions cost much more than congestion. However, we do not seek to minimize congestion concerns. We do, however, ask that you think outside the box. A multitude of studies, including one by the California Department of Transportation, show that more lanes do not reduce congestion, but rather induce demand. It's important to keep the bigger picture in mind at this time. In order to uphold our national, even international, reputation as a livable state, we must be bold. We must prioritize active transportation, infrastructure, and transit operations in the 2017 package. We urge you to prioritize expansion of transportation options in order to benefit and not further harm our communities. On a regular basis, I hear horror stories from elders in our community, as well as from other community members about their challenges, both with TriMet and our dangerous transportation system due to the lack of sidewalks and other active transportation infrastructure on the outskirts of the city as more and more of our community members are displaced from the central city. Please prioritize safety, reduction of pollution, and improvement of health outcomes through this opportunity. The state of Oregon's study on greenhouse gas emissions indicates that transportation remains the largest contributor to the state's in-boundary emissions. The last thing we need is to induce the use of more cars. Please prioritize equitable funding and distribution of active transportation infrastructure and transit access that prioritizes human-scale mobility for greenhouse gas reduction and climate adaptation.
And while we'll multiple need to ask studies, you to wrap up. Thank you. What's that? Can you wrap up, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Got two more bullets. So while these studies highlight the environmental benefits of mass transit and active transportation, none of the current state, regional, or local processes include strong equity lenses to prioritize projects and to raise revenue in progressive ways. So please be a leader on this and be transparent in your decisions about transportation investments. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Elaine Friesen-Strang. I am a member of ARP, where I volunteer and I serve on the executive council, and I live in Northeast Portland. Thank you for this opportunity to offer these comments and for your commitment to listen to Oregonians about their transportation needs. ARP Oregon has over 500,000 members in the state of Oregon. We often hear from our members about their needs for transportation and their concerns about safety. According to a 2015 Oregon State Pedestrian Safety Report, Oregonians 65 years of age and older are four times more likely to be killed while walking on the streets than any other age group. We need policies to reduce roadway speeds, to increase safety and investments, to make our streets safer for walking and biking, and a commitment to developing a plan for achieving zero death and serious injuries on our roadways. We also need a commitment for public transit and special transportation for seniors and people with disabilities. When asked, 90% of people age 65 and older would like to stay in their homes as long as possible. However, 50% of older adults say they could not continue to live in their communities if they could no longer drive. A man who is 70 years old today will outlive his driving by 6 years. A woman who is 70 will outlive her driving by 11. Ironically, when we come to a time in our life when we have to rely more on walking and transit, we also find ourselves more vulnerable. I often find myself wondering, will I be able to cross the street in time before that light changes? I plan which streets to cross, what time of the day I should walk, depending on how busy the streets are and how impatient the drivers may be. Just last year, my neighbor was struck in a crosswalk by a vehicle turning left off of Northeast Sandy. We often look, drivers look for other cars, not pedestrians. We call on you to require better coordination between transportation and land use planning, creating a future that's better for all modes of travel. We need sustainable transportation infrastructure for older adults to remain active, independent, and engaged members of our community. Thank you for your commitment to expanding transportation options for all Oregonians and for making our state a great place to live for people of all ages and abilities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rall and Aaron Brown, please. And then on deck, we will have Tom Sinsick and Dr. Randall Smith, please.
I'm sorry, I did that.
That was my mistake. Right now, it's Chris Rall and Aaron Brown. I got out of order. Sorry about that. And then Tom and Dr. Smith next. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I am Chris Rall. I'm with Transportation for America. I'm also based here in Portland. And I just wanted to kind of cue up a few questions to help you to kind of deepen your thinking and as you're going to tackle this idea of doing a transportation bill. One is, you know, how are you going to – taxpayers are going to be wondering, how are you going to be spending their money? How are you going to be choosing the projects that you invest in? Are you going to go in a back room and kind of figure out which, you know, pet projects can kind of you can kind of get in each district and bring home the bacon? Or is there going to be a set of criteria and sort of a rational way that where taxpayers can see and go online and see how those projects were selected and why and what was the return on investment on each of those projects? So that's one kind of thing that I think would be useful for you to be thinking about. One of the criteria you'll probably be thinking about if you do a criteria-based system is thinking about congestion. And congestion, you know, we've been talking about a lot tonight, it's a complex issue. And one way to think about it is just like good and bad cholesterol, there's good and bad congestion. If you go out here to Division Street right behind you, out here it's five lanes, traffic flows pretty well this side of 82nd. You can go about a mile west towards downtown. It goes down to two lanes. It's pretty slow, but right where it's really slow, that's actually one of the hottest restaurant districts in Portland. It's very happening. There's a ton of apartment development going on there. So congestion is complex in terms of how you're measuring it. Another way to think about congestion is thinking about the cold certainty of geometry. A bus with 50 people on it takes up roughly the same amount of space as two cars with two people in them if they're single occupancy vehicles. So thinking about how you're going to measure congestion is really going to affect the solutions that you go after in terms of the challenges of how we make this transportation system work better. Our organization has a lot of resources that can help you looking at how other states have done this and looked at it. And so we stand ready to help you in tackling these questions.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Aaron Brown, and I'm the board president of Oregon Walks. Our full comments have been submitted online, so I will be brief. Oregon Walks is the statewide pedestrian advocacy organization. We're working to make walking a safe, convenient, and accessible transportation option for every community in the state of Oregon. Improving conditions for walking in communities, large and small, is a remarkably cost-effective investment that helps address a variety of statewide goals, including improved public health, cleaner air, climate resiliency, local economic development, mitigation of congestion, urban affordability, an aging demographic, quality of life, and that's just, I'm running out of breath, but we could continue. Our chronic underinvestment in basic facilities for walking and complementary investments in biking, transit, and paratransit have consequences ranging from our unacceptably high rates of traffic fatalities, vast disparities in the health and livability of neighborhoods, and increased isolation for our aging communities. It's imperative that this package fully reflects the needs of residents from Ashland to Astoria, Portland to Pendleton, ensuring that children have safe routes to school, that grandparents can walk to their neighborhood stores, and that every community has multiple transportation options that allow them access to jobs, services, and recreation. Transportation infrastructure represents a significant integral investment in the fabric of our communities, and we heartily encourage legislators from across the state to support investments in connected, accessible, and walkable communities. This transportation package represents a profound opportunity for the legislature to make a firm, uncompromising investment in the health and well-being of our everyday Main Streets. We look forward to an ongoing conversation in the months ahead with Democrats and Republicans, urban and rural and suburban legislators alike, about the necessity of investing in walkable communities across the state. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sinsick and Dr. Smith, please. And on deck we have James Dibble and Nick Engelfried. Engelfried. Gentlemen.
Good evening, co-chairs Beyer and McKeown and members of the committee. My name is Tom Sinsick, a resident of Northeast Portland, where transportation problems abound. I have walked my district where kids are forced to walk the dangerous, busy streets and bike them to schools. It's really pretty bad. I am a nurse, and today I speak to you from a public health and for the public good. First, it is essential that this committee makes decisions that are decisions made in light of the greatest threat to our public good, that is, the climate crisis. This applies to both the urban and rural parts of our community. Climate change is highly connected to transportation and the burning of fossil fuels. Transportation also has implications on other aspects of your duty to advance the public health. That includes things like biking and walking as well. It is therefore paramount that this committee do everything creatively possible to get people out of their cars and get them on bikes, walking, and mass transit. Make these the methods of choice, whether they be for school, work, errands, or pleasure. It is clear from testimony that a consumerism philosophy is causing much of the problems. But please do your part to keep our communities safer and healthier and take action to fight climate change and at the same time take care of our transportation issues. So, like people have called for, think big.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Yes, I'm Randy Smith from the Department of Physics at Portland State University, and I'm not speaking for Portland State University, but for my research project. It occurred to me that I also have a project with NASA, and that the vision statement that I've seen, I've only seen a fragment, and I'm sorry about that, needs a 30-year vision to look at the entire situation in Oregon. Oregon is ripe to be to have high-speed rail, complete rail system without the state and within the state, a convenient way to get to LeGrand or Pendleton or Medford, things we don't have at present. And part of that is to ask you to consider two vision plans for the future, 30-year plans, where you take a long-range vision document with options, possibilities, and some visionary futures that are technologically and science-based. So at Portland State, we have programs where we work with Intel. Students move to Intel, and we do work for them. FEI company, same thing. We have cooperative arrangements with that. We don't really have that for transportation. And I know that if we were able to develop a university science-based transportation program for the future, companies would be willing to come to this state and build an assembly plant for high-speed rail if they knew the state had a commitment for 30 years to develop their product for a period of time. And that commitment is lacking at present. I think it's fair to say that if we divided a future vision panel into the state of Oregon and what might be used in long-term development, and a second panel on the region for high-speed rail, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, with appropriate connections, then we'd have a better base for science, for university research, for students developing their work and transitioning to the companies.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Next up, we have Mr. Dibble and Mr. Engelfried. And on deck, Brad Perkins and Tom Deschenet. You can let me know if I'm even close later. Mr. Dibble.
Hi, good evening. My name is James Dibble, and I'm the Senior Executive Logistics Manager for Goodwill Industries of the Columbia Willamette. In my current capacity, I manage the logistics and supply chain operations to move donated goods in the most efficient manner across our region. To give you a geographical perspective, our territory spans 27 counties, north to Woodland, Washington, west to the Oregon coast, east to Central Oregon, and south to Corvallis. Our mission is simple. It's to provide vocational opportunities to people with barriers to employment. We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization employing more than 2,600 individuals. Almost 70% of Goodwill employees have a barrier to employment, such as a broken work history, language difficulties, incomplete education, or various physical disabilities. Last year, Goodwill provided more than 530,000 services to people with barriers to employment through programs including Job Connection, Employee Career Enhancement, English as a Second Language, and Long-Term Services. In 2015, Goodwill helped more than 10,000 unique individuals find jobs in the community. In 2015, Goodwill offered and taught over 2,000 English as a Second Language classes to over 1,300 employees and community students. Additionally, last year, Goodwill diverted more than 186 million pounds of household goods from landfills. We are the ultimate recycler. Now, in order to support Goodwill's mission and to be able to provide all these free services to our community, we operate 50 retail community training stores and 2 e-commerce businesses. Our retail operations virtually pay for everything we do. Goodwill operates a few different store social enterprise models: the traditional retail stores, 3 boutiques, 5 outlet warehouse and recycling centers, and 65 convenient donation sites.
I'll need to have you wrap up.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
To service these locations, we operate a private fleet consisting of 66 trucks and 359 trailers, making over 100 trips across our territory every day. So my goal today is not to sell you on Goodwill, but is to illustrate the need for a healthy, sustainable freight and transportation network. In short, the cost of our ability to move freight directly impacts the amount of free community services we can provide.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Engelfried, thank you for being here.
Hi, my name is Nick Engelfried. I live in Hillsboro. And like many other folks in this greater metro area, I'm a person who does not own a car, who gets around almost entirely on public transit, by biking, and by walking. I'm at this time in my life, I'm a lower income person. I can't afford to have my own car. And so I really rely on alternative forms of transportation to get around. And I'm certainly not alone in that respect. I know there are many, many folks in this region who are in the same situation. And so I want to say first, I really appreciate all the work that has gone into transit, biking, and walking up to this point. At the same time, there's still much more that we can do and need to do. There are still places that are difficult or impossible to get to on public transit, and we still have streets that are unsafe for bicyclists. An example I'm thinking of is Cornell Road in Hillsboro, near where I live. There are long stretches of that road that have basically no bike lane. Cars are moving very fast. It feels very unsafe when you're on that road on a bicycle. So that's an example. And I hope that the committee and our legislature will prioritize transit, bike paths, walking paths during this process. And I just want to say that when Oregon invests in those kinds of transportation options, we're investing in folks like myself who may not be able to afford our own car but are involved in our communities and contributing every way we can. So thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for being here, sir. Mr. Perkins and Mr. Deschenais. And on deck we have Corky Collier and Dave Nelson, please. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good evening, Brad Perkins, DSCADA High Speed Rail. 19 years from now, Oregon's population is to increase 25%, and freight volume movement will increase 60%. As Senate Bill 100 took a broad approach to land use planning to stop suburban sprawl 43 years ago, we now need to do the same in transportation planning. Maybe a new Senate Bill 200 is needed to implement a statewide plan that approves long-term public and private resources to pay for a progressive and safe rail and trail network. Improving vehicle-only interchanges such as I-84, I-5 connection and others on I-205 and 217 is a Band-Aid approach to planning. Spending billions of dollars on choke points and light rail will not do enough to move people fast, frequently, and reliably. Oregon should be planning for the next 43 years, not just today's needs. Siloed, costly, short-term planning efforts need to be managed by more experienced leaders who are not limited to road and transit planning, but know high-speed rail planning as well. Only then can we avoid costly failures in planning studies such as the Columbia River Crossing, slow-moving passenger rail study on Union Pacific's railroad, and Southwest Corridor Committee's decision to use light rail with its limitations instead of even considering a fast commuter rail system in an exclusive corridor as an alternative. Let's be serious. The real choke points that are negatively affecting Oregon's economy today are at I-5's bridge crossing the Columbia River, along I-5's Trevilly Curves, and at Highway 26's Vista Bridge Tunnel. All these choke points can eventually be relieved via a well-planned, fast, frequent, and reliable commuter express system connected to town center transportation hubs for transit, cars, and bikes. 6 minutes from Vancouver to the Rose Quarter, 11 minutes from Bridgeport to Rose Quarter, and 5 minutes from Highway 26 217 interchange to Vancouver will attract high usage, be cheaper to build, and attract private investment.
Right. Sir, if you wouldn't mind wrapping up, please.
I will.
Thank you. You can submit your written testimony.
Last sentence. A new north-south express rail corridor with a new bridge across the Columbia River connecting the Rose Quarter with Vancouver, Washington is a good starting point. ODOT and WSDOT need to take a serious look at Cascadia High Speed Rail's concept plan for this first phase. Again, thank you for your time.
Welcome.
Hi, my name is Tom DeShane.
Close. Sorry.
That's fine, thanks. I appreciate what you folks are going through very much. You have a big job. I'm a commercial industrial real estate broker for the last 36 years in the Portland area. I'm with Colliers International. I used to be with Norris Beggs and Simpson. And we've seen growth, very interesting growth. There are several points you need to, of course, consider, but let me point out a couple of them, many of which you've heard already in today's testimony. Portland metro area has always been, since World War II, predominantly a distribution center for the West Coast. 75% of Portland jobs are related to manufacturing. Oregon exported about $20 billion in products last year. Choke points are significantly reducing efficiency and adding to those costs, as you've heard earlier today. Portland's the fifth most congested metro area in the country. Transportation packages must address congestion and solving or diminishing those choke points. These constraints shrink our market and limit manufacturing and distribution growth here in the metro area. You've heard most of that stuff, but I thought what might be appropriate or help you a little bit is give you an idea of some of the firms we represent or the companies we represent and what they're finding. We're representing a West Coast regional company with about 30 locations. They need to expand. They need to bring another division into this market. We're searching for around 40 to 60,000 square feet. To meet the need, the requirement is site-specific to a particular submarket. Submarket, in fact, that you folks were at earlier today. Delivery to and pickup of by their clientele is time-sensitive. They need not only a building but lay-down yard as well. They also have the flexibility to combine this division with another division, which could makes all kinds of sense. We spent nearly a year looking for the appropriate property to no avail. And we're losing about 20 to 30 family wage jobs if this continues. We represent another second company with very similar type uses. In this case, we're losing about 20 to 30 jobs. Finally, we did work with a company that expanded from about 60,000 square feet to 80,000 square feet, so we're only missing about 15 jobs in that case. So just a few anecdotal points to remember. Thank you very much.
And again, you can submit your written testimony, so we'll have it on.
Very good.
Thank you. Mr. Collier, or Corky Collier, and Dave Nelson, please. And on deck, we have Bill Wagner and Alan Smith.
Good evening. I'm Corky Collier with Columbia Corridor Association. Portland's created a paradox. The factors that make a community livable can create conditions that increase freight demand while reducing freight access. Conditions that increase freight demand include increased density and a diverse use of mixes in close proximity, the same factors that contribute to livability. We often narrow intersections, tighten turning radii, add on-street parking. These are great benefits, but they create problems for freight. Why do we care? Well, because it would take 50 Priuses to replace one UPS van, and those 50 Priuses would use about 10 times more fuel. In addition, more than most states, Oregon businesses rely on national and global markets for business growth. For example, the ag community sells 80% of their products outside of the state. The Columbia Corridor is home to 2,500 businesses employing 65,000 people, mostly at middle-income wages. That's the traded sector. It's great for our state, but it relies on trucks. Let's face it, trucks are ugly, noisy, and they're in your way, just like buses. And just like buses, they're efficient, they have professional drivers, and they're willing to pay for improvements. I ask you to embrace the efficiency of those ugly trucks. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Dave Nelson. I'm a Vancouver, Washington resident, and I'm here to hopefully build some bridges, and not out of concrete and steel. The bridge I have in mind is a bridge between legislative groups. I've been working hard for the last 2 years in Washington to bring some people together over there. And the thought behind what we're after is to get a starting point so we can get this project going again on the Columbia River. The real issue there in my mind after researching this for years is the fact that we didn't have adequate communications. And because we didn't have a system established where we could communicate between the two states, we had a failure, a massive failure. And what I like to say is we have one community, two states, because we really do have one community. So it's a big issue when you start to think about how these communities work. There's 60,000 people that commute. I mean, that's what this workforce is amazing, how it moves. And so what we worked on and proposed was a committee of legislators. And the reason it was legislators was because that's where the buck stops. The buck stops with you. It doesn't stop with Metro. It doesn't stop with the cities that you well heard. They are all coming here begging you for money. So you're the people in charge. You're the people that should be there to make these decisions. And so what was proposed was 8 members from each state, bipartisan, bicameral, so that we had equal representation, hopefully people out of the transportation committees and local folks, doesn't have to be, but that way we could bring them together. We could take the Ruckelhaus Center, we could take Portland State for mediation, bring them in, and move this process forward. You all have a copy of House Bill 2414, which went through the Washington legislature last year, and that bill passed through the Transportation Committee in the House unanimously, Democrats, Republicans. That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think your point was made. Thank you very much. Next we have Mr. Wagner and Mr. Smith, and on deck we have Brian Gray and Larry Gesher.
Thank you for being here, gentlemen.
My name is Alan Smith. Thank you for this opportunity to provide comments on transportation preservation and modernization. To adequately address this topic, it is necessary to acknowledge that our climate is at a critical tipping point. By 2050, if we don't reduce emissions enough to keep the temperature rise below 2 degrees Celsius, climate change is likely to accelerate out of control and destroy much of life on Earth. The urgency to reduce emissions and increase carbon sequestration is crucial. One-third of our state's total climate pollution comes from the transportation sector, so we must make major changes in our transportation system to prevent this catastrophe. Even an electric car with three passengers using electricity from average sources in the United States causes as much climate pollution as a gasoline-fueled car with five passengers, about one metric ton of climate pollution for 20,000 kilometers of travel. A passenger train in the U.S. will get an individual only half that far on a metric ton of climate pollution, while a Eurostar train will take the passenger over four times as far, 81,000 kilometers. In the U.S., we consume over twice as much energy per person as Western Europeans, and a lot of it is on transportation. In the early part of the last century, bicycling was very popular in Los Angeles. There was even an elevated bike path all the way from Pasadena to downtown Los Angeles. Los Angeles also had the world's best public transportation system based on electric trolley cars. Then the oil companies and auto companies did away with all that. Now our transportation system and our cities are dominated by cars. Here in Portland, it takes about twice as long to get around the city by buses, by car. If the trip requires one or more transfers, it's even longer. Other cities in Oregon have even less convenient public transportation. If I ride my bicycle in the street, to avoid catastrophic climate change and our transportation system must transition from fossil fuels, and we must have convenient and safe alternatives to automobiles. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bill Wagner from Vancouver, Washington. I moved there about 20 years ago, and along with all the rest of you, experienced this incredible increase in traffic density on our roads, our existing roads. And I'm in Portland quite a bit, and the congestion around the Rose Quarter in that area and the bridge approaches is known to all of us. And there is no single solution. We've had great input from a lot of people. I just want to add that we need to think big picture. Someone talked about a 30-year plan. I think that's great, and I'm hoping that Dave Nelson's suggestions on bringing the legislatures together will look at a big picture plan that takes over 30 years to get it done, so we can increase throughput from Oregon to Washington. Some considerations, a group of engineers been meeting up in Washington, looking at various things, railroad, rapid transit, more bike paths, and among them also a connector, a rapid connector from Vancouver, bypassing Portland on the west. But it's only part, an expensive part, but there's a lot of things that we can do and need to do, but we need a big planning and a big picture. Thank you so much for taking our time.
Sir, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Mr. Gray and Mr. Gesher, please. And then I believe we'll take just a brief recess, and I'd like to confer with my co-chair.
Good evening. My name is Brian Gray, and I'm the president of Knife River's Northwest Region. And I'm also the incoming president for AGC next year, so we'll be seeing more of you in the future. Knife River, for those that don't know, we are the state's largest construction materials producer. And so we produce the asphalt, the concrete, and the rock that goes in the roads or goes into the light rail projects or into the bike paths. I just want to talk about the congestion that you heard and saw today in Portland. It affects everybody up at the front desk. Unfortunately, I have a truck probably right now sitting in Wilsonville trying to get cement powder down to Medford to pour concrete for tomorrow. Our asphalt liquid that we use to pave roads with comes out of Portland, and it's going down to Coos Bay tomorrow. So it's got to go through this congestion. So that cost of congestion in Portland is affecting the entire state. Knife River, we have about 1,000 employees. They're a great family income project or wages. We have I checked on this morning, 722 on the road vehicles in the state of Oregon. And of those 722 vehicles, 400 of them are heavy duty trucks that weigh over 26,000 pounds, not including my Ford Explorer that I drove out here today. So we really are a transportation company. We're not just a materials delivery company. We are a transportation company. As a side note, Knife River is participating in ODOT's pilot project, the ORGO, to try to find longer-term sustainable funding for transportation. So we are participating in that. Congestion is a real cost when it comes to getting materials to the projects. It's about 30% of the cost of the materials is in transportation. In other words, our trucks that you see out there on the roads are about $90 per hour to operate fuel. So that's about $1.50 per minute. Today in Portland, I had about 60 ready-mix trucks and 40 dump trucks working, about 100 trucks. At $1.50 per minute in congestion, that can add up to a lot of dollars. And many people would think that those dollars go right into our corporation's pockets. That's not true. We bid on projects, and we've got to be competitive. And so those dollars go back to the cities, the ports, all of the people you heard earlier. They benefit from that, of being able to pave more miles with those dollars saved. I've got a lot of comments. I would love to talk to you all. I guess what I would share with you is that Knife River stands prepared to sit down, give you tours of our projects, testify, as is AGC, is willing to work through the entire process starting now. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Rapid fire.
Thank you, co-chairs and committee. I'm Larry Gesher, president of HP Civil. We're an emerging small business located in the state and Oregon, specializing in bridge and heavy highway work. We employ currently 20 employees. We'll be ramping up to 30 employees over the course of the next 40 days. Our average wage of our employees is over $70,000 a year. Over the course of my 30-year career working in Oregon in heavy highway work, I've seen the transition from expansion to modernization to now we're doing maintenance. Currently, we're just finishing up on a bridge in the gorge where we're just doing an overlay over the top of the bridge deck to sustain the bridge to get another 5 or 10 years out of it. But it's one of the few times in my career where I've actually seen the brakes get put on when we started running into things that were really should have been fixed, and it comes down to funding. And it'd be like you working on the roof of your house, taking off all the rotten wood, and you find more and more and more and run out of budget, and it's like, okay, at some point you stop and patch it back together. That's what we're currently doing in Oregon. And it's kind of scary when it's a traveling public that you're working with and you're doing that. I'm not saying that ODOT would ever put something unsafe out there, but it still ceases to amaze me as we go into a community to replace a bridge, and we find a bridge that we can't take our trucks over the top of, but yet alone there's residents there. And so you start questioning, how do the fire trucks get to these residents? They don't. They take little tenders in, or they run hose to the property owners. And we still see that day in, day out. And so I guess I'd urge you guys for, as you heard, a robust package. But a robust package isn't just about replacing the things out there. It's about making our industry efficient. We did this back when the OTIA package came out. Our industry reacts accordingly to the funding, and we get really efficient when we see long-term funding to where we can invest in our companies and our employees. You guys have done a great thing starting the CTE program back up and starting to fund the high schools to get career tech ed back in, and we want to give those people the jobs to go to because they're a great family living wage in what we do. So we appreciate your guys' time.
Thank you so much for being here. We are time constrained, as you know. We have this room for a limited amount of time. The upside is we've had an amazing turnout of community members, which we greatly appreciate. The downside is we have well over 30 people left to testify, and we have to wrap this up. I'm going to take two more people. One has come from over 100 miles, and it's our practice to always prioritize people who've driven more than 100 miles. So, Mrs. Pape, would you like to come up? And next on our list, we have Jeff. I'm not going to get the last name. Starts with an A. From Drive, Oregon. I'm sorry. Thank you for being here this evening. And I know that we do have people who need to leave precisely at 7. So, committee members, if you need to go, please feel free to exit as you need to. And anyone that has not been able to testify, please submit written testimony with the staff. You can email it in. If you have it written, you can hand it to the staff on your way out, and it will show up on OLIS, and we will all have an opportunity to read it. Thank you. Yes, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Representative McEwen and Senator Beyer. I apologize for this. This is all about the pollen that we love to look out through a window. Thank you for this meeting. And as I served on the governor's transportation panel, chairing highways and bridges.
Excuse me one second.
Yeah?
Your name for the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Susie Pape, Eugene, Oregon, primarily. Anyway, so I chaired highways and bridges for the governor's transportation panel. My eyes were opened. When asked to serve, I immediately said yes, because I see the next 2 to 3 years, or saw the next 2 to 3 years, of my volunteer time as a way to create jobs in the state of Oregon. We need to pass a transportation bill. We also need to be sure that we're cooperating between all forms of transportation and land use planning. Now, that might mean apartments close to where you work, but it also really means working with the two groups to get the best outcome. We're looking at improving Highway 97, perhaps, to take the load off of I-5 and take much of the congestion out of Portland, because trucks can go from Redding to Canada on 97 if they don't have to come through here. But right now, their insurance companies won't let them because it's a dangerous stretch. We lost May Trucking Company headquarters out of Oregon. Couldn't develop at Brooks and I-5. They spent 10 years trying to get that built, and land use planning wouldn't let them. There are many, many small towns and communities in eastern and central Oregon who are not looking for comfort and speed. They want you to change a law so they can use their yellow school buses to get older people to the doctor. That seems like it ought to be a pretty easy pass.
I'm sorry, I'll have to have you wrap up, please.
Okay. We need to look at ways throughout Oregon to make these work, and one of them would be your Rose Quarter. You cannot have a city overbuild an area and then say, whoops, we have a problem. They need to work together from the beginning. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Jeff Allen. I'm Executive Director of Drive Oregon. Thank you for squeezing me in here. I'll be brief. I just want to encourage you to think about the modernization term in your committee charter creatively. We were very involved in the $50 million smart city proposal that the Mayor Hales mentioned earlier. And one of the things Secretary Fox said when the mayors were making their pitches that stuck with me is that the transportation system is really changing before our eyes. And I often tell people, when I left high school, went off to college, my parents gave me an electric typewriter. And it was really exciting. It was very state of the art. It actually had a little LCD screen with about 12 characters in it. You could save things. Obviously, we've come a long way since then, but our transportation technologies have not advanced nearly as quickly. And we didn't modernize the media by buying more and faster electric typewriters, obviously. So I think the future of transportation is shared, connected, and electric. And very briefly on the electric front, because many of you have heard our pitch on this before. If we're concerned about a transportation package making the air cleaner and healthier and reducing carbon emissions, that has to include electrifying all modes of transportation, electric buses, electric cars. Driving an electric car today is the equivalent of driving a car that gets 94 miles per gallon, and it's only getting cleaner. And the last point I'll make is that the best way to get more electric vehicles on the road is to help reduce the upfront cost, just as we've done with a lot of other leading technologies, whether it's rooftop solar or hybrid cars, for that matter, when they first came out. And that will also have an economic benefit to the state, bringing some of the $7 billion that Oregonians spend on gas and diesel every year back into the state, keeping it circulating, creating more jobs. And so our proposal for a rebate on electric vehicles last session was analyzed by Keybridge Associates. They found it would actually increase state GDP because of that economic impact of bringing the money back into the state. And I'll submit my comments and take it from there. Thanks.
Thank you so much. I think I'll just wrap up by thanking you all for being willing to participate in the second meeting. We have, I believe, 6 more meetings scheduled across the state. There will be many more opportunities for our citizens from here to Ontario and parts south and west and Klamath Falls to weigh in. And this was a wonderful way to get us through our second meeting. We are delighted that there is this much energy around a topic that we all care deeply about and think is very important. And I believe I can speak on behalf of certainly the governor and the, Madam Speaker, if she would allow, and the Senate President, that this is a key piece of what's coming in 2017. So thank you for your willingness to participate. If you were not able to testify, please submit your written testimony with staff, either hand it in or you can email it in, and we'll look forward to reading it once it's online. But enjoy the rest of your evening and safe travels home. And on that note, we stand adjourned.
You serve on the vision.